You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hello, hello, welcome once again to another episode. And this episode we're recording ready for Halloween. And there's a reason for that. We're going to be talking all about fear, particularly around fear in terms of stories. And to that end, I've brought on a friend of mine who is an author. He has written, well, we'll find out what he's written. His name is Paul Fitzwilliams. He wasn't always an author. He trained to be a film producer. He used to wander around student films shouting, "Time is money," at people before stealing their cake. Man after my own heart. Having figured out that that wasn't the most successful way to get hired, he went on to sell pencils and pints for a living because people always seem to need one or the other, right? For the last 18 years, Paul's told people that he works for the government. He just does that in the hopes that they'll think that he's a super spy. He isn't. But then again, that's what you'd expect a super spy to say, right? He has passed a couple of new laws. He's convinced one government minister to quote the Spice Girls in the House of Commons. Pretty impressive. And he spent the whole of London 2012 in an underground bunker. On at least one occasion, he has had tens of thousands of people march through central London protesting against what he is doing with his life. Now, whether that's work-related or not, he's leaving it to our imagination. When he's not making the world a better place, slash contributing to the fall of society, delete according to your political affiliations, Paul's also a photographer, and he can be regularly found at cult TV events, telling people to smile as they stand nervously next to their childhood heroes. His motto is, what happens in Paul's studio stays in Paul's studio. At least that's what Paul's been told to say by his lawyers. His photographs have been published in a very eclectic range of magazines, from Amorist to Scottish Field to the Doctor Who magazine. Paul writes audiobooks for Big Finish Productions. He's written it for their gothic horror series, Dark Shadows. The 2020 sees the release of Windcliffe, which is described as a terrifying 13-part full-cast audio horror serial set in an asylum and performed in real time. Other audiobooks that Paul's done for Big Finish include Doctor Who, A Small Semblance of Home. He was a contributor to 1001 TV series You Must Watch Before You Die, where, amongst other things, he was paid to watch The Real Housewives of Orange County, and a program about a cowboy cop in New York City. Now, he's not quite got over this yet. I mentioned Paul's a novelist. The Axe and Grindstone is Paul's first novel, and he's had to convince his mother that the main character isn't really based on him. She's not entirely convinced. He lives on a roundabout in Lewisham with his husband, Gareth, and their two cats, Billy and Hartnell. His favourite pizza is an abomination of hot and spicy things with barbecue sauce. And his favourite colour, naturally, is TARDIS blue. That's from the 1987 to 1989 version of the TARDIS. That is my guest this episode, Paul Fitzwilliams. Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
Hi, Keith. Yeah, that sounds rather more impressive than it actually is all of that. So, I'm doing great over here. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining us. I love the fact you've had 10,000 people marching against what you're doing. That's pretty impressive.
It's like almost, you turn on the news and what your day job is the front page of the news, and you turn on the radio and they're talking about what you're doing in the office that day, and you just go, okay, so nobody in the country is doing quite what we're doing at the moment. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? And you're never quite sure. But it certainly gets you thinking about things in a way that you can't if you don't have, you know, every single parish council in the country telling you you're wrong about something. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. True. I can imagine. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff we could try and talk about around that, which I know you wouldn't be able to talk about for obvious reasons, but that's not what we're here. We are here because you are an author. As we touched on in your bio, you've written for Big Finish, massive company that kind of single-handedly kept a lot of interest in Doctor Who during the wilderness years. They do a lot of Doctor Who and other stuff. They do lots of horror, and that's your particular thing. You write horror. You write horror stories. You scare people for a living.
I try not to, but then it kind of like descends into that way. You know, you start off writing a lovely cheery story about sort of like a barmaid or a pub manager, and then all of a sudden her abusive husband comes back from the dead and start throwing things at her, and you think I didn't start my day out thinking this way. And there are two types of authors. There are authors who plan their entire story. There are authors, and I've tried to do this and I've failed abysmally, who stick different coloured post-it notes across their rooms in order to actually plan, you know, how am I going to scare people today? How am I going to like physically piece and plot this kind of thing together? I can't do it because my brain doesn't work in that. My brain doesn't go, do you know what will be really scary today? I'm going to put this character through this. I just end up starting writing, and then all of a sudden something happens and you just go, I'm just going to go with this and see where it goes. And all of a sudden, you've got a ghost coming out of a toilet or something like that. So that's my way. I would give anything to be able to think through these things, but no, it just happens.
So you don't plan. You basically just sit down and write, and you're as entertained by what's coming out as we are.
I'm surprised and slightly sick. The thing that you mentioned earlier, this Dark Shadows Windcliff, which we're currently writing. I'm writing with a few other people. One of my goals was to outscare one of my co-writers, who just has a reputation for being one of the scariest writers at Big Finish. And I was like, no, I can do better than him. So let's crack on and do it. And all of a sudden, you think it's going down a certain way, and then you get to know the characters. And suddenly the most scariest things aren't the blood horror, it's not the blood-curdling screams, it's not what you think, but actually the most scary things about fiction is actually understanding the characters, which you're liking, which you become friends with. And all of a sudden, if you suddenly become close to these people, you start to understand what makes them tick and what makes them afraid. And that's a centerpiece of what we're trying to do at the moment. Without giving too much spoilers away, because I will be shot and I haven't been paid yet. Just understanding actually the nature of fear and what it means for individuals, the fact that one person finds something scary and another person finds it funny, understanding the subtleties of fear, understanding how you can tap into those senses, it's a really interesting thing. And all of a sudden you wake up in the middle of the night and you just go, yes, that is horrible, I'm totally going to wake up tomorrow morning with a smile and do that to someone. And I worry about myself.
So it's certainly going to be quite the horror fest then.
Yeah, but not an out and out. Yes, it's an out and out horror fest. But what we're trying to do it in a way which you just switch off, go away, and you think, actually, that is horrible. If that had happened to me, I don't know how I would cope with it. Because everyone copes with things in their own way. And so you might get, you know, the horror films of Stephen King and everything like that way, where, you know, there is blood, you get the Hammer Horror series. But what actually, the subtle horror the subtle mind tricks, the stories where you walk away, and as a reader or as a viewer, you put it down and you just can't stop thinking about what that particular person has gone through, their journey, how they managed to deal with it themselves. And I think, talking as we're going to about actually what we get out of horror stories, what we get out of fiction like that, actually understanding and learning from a particular person's journey and actually going, right, if this person can do something, if that person can look at a particular environment or a particular set of circumstances, and if that person can get through it, then so can I. And so I think there's an inspiring thing about this. And we've got so many characters in our serial, which we're trying to keep up with. Understanding actually that who's the strong ones, who is learning from who is drawing inspiration from other people. It's you're just so lucky to be able to do it and just be able to get into that level of depth with what I do in my spare time. So yeah,
cool. Interesting thing that came up from there. You're saying that some horror stories can be inspiring, which I guess is something most people, that's certainly not something I'd ever considered before, but I kind of see where you're coming from there, that you're right, we can be inspired by what in good horror stories, we can be inspired by the way the characters manage to overcome those challenges, in perhaps some pretty grisly challenges, but so yeah, I guess in a way they can be inspiring
stories. Yeah, I mean, I remember back, it's 20 years ago now, more than 20 years ago, I went to work on a project in Peru for the summer, a group of us going to build a church of all things, and we went out there for 10 weeks or so, stayed with the family, and at the end of it we had a little bit of a break, a little bit of a holiday, because it was pretty much full on for 7 days a week. So we went traveling around Peru, and there was this big bridge. And I remember seeing this big bridge. I'm terrified of heights. They just don't work. My legs just freeze up. I can't do it. And our tour guide said, anybody that wants to do it, that you can jump off the bridge. And I remember looking at it, and I was going, no, thank you. I know what I like and I don't like that. But then you see other people being scared and then other people doing it. And then you think, actually, the only thing stopping me doing that is me being scared. And I refuse to let that be a good enough reason. And once you think, actually, I've got standards. And if my own worst enemy is myself, then this one occasion, that's not a good enough reason for me not to. So I did it and I belly flopped. And I came up the other side. And to be fair, we went on honeymoon a few years ago and the same thing was happening. Would you like to jump off this cliff? And I was like, no, because I've done it once. I don't need to do it again. That's not fear. That is a case of actually knowing that it's not for you.
Yeah.
But being able to confront that for years and years and years, that was one of my proudest things. Just being able to go, me being afraid is not a good enough reason not to do that thing.
I love that.
So it's perfectly safe. You've got people around you. Yes, I belly flopped.
You survived.
But you just came out the other end and goes, like, yeah, it's fine.
So getting back to horror stories and the kind of stuff that you write and so on, there's something that's always struck me as a bit strange about horror stories and the way we love them is in normal life, we try to do everything we can to avoid being scared, because fear, it's it's not a pleasant situation. We try and keep out of things that are going to scare us, keep out of situations which will bring in fear for us. And yet, horror stories, probably going back to the dawn of time, from right when we first started telling stories around the campfire, horror stories have always had a fascination for people. I mean, so many of us grew up being terrified each week watching Doctor Who, hiding behind the sofa, but not wanting to miss an episode. And horror films still always do well in the box office. Books, some of the classic horror stories have certainly stood the test of time, the Draculas, the Frankensteins, all that sort of thing. What is it, do you think, about horror stories that we love, given we try desperately to avoid being scared? Why are we so keen to throw ourselves into this thing which we know is going to terrify us?
I think there's a couple of things here. I think there's fight or flight reaction thing. Never say that kind of word. there's flight, which in a normal everyday situation, if something goes boom, you run, and you know we're trying to run out and do it. There's the perception of having to do that, or I think the fear of being afraid, mm-hmm. is something which kind of drives us, as in I'm not going to go into that room because there are spiders in there and I hate spiders. You're not around spiders, but the perception of doing that. But I think where this is a really interesting thing is I think it's similar to eating a hot curry, because you know it's going to be hot. You know it could be a little bit painful and it's going to be an uncomfortable scenario, but it sets off the adrenaline. And adrenaline can be a good thing. And adrenaline can make you feel not happy, but it can spark things in your brain. So when you are reading or listening to a scary story, because it starts to build that fear in you, it also starts to drive the adrenaline, and it starts to get the blood pumping a little bit faster, and it starts to get your heart beating a little bit faster, and it's you start to become on edge. And in some situations, you're right, that can be a bad thing. But if you are doing this in a safe environment, if you're tucked up in bed reading a horror story with the lights on, I think there's something about the same kind of thing about eating a hot chili, that it sparks something in you. Plus, you're kind of happy that whoever's in the story is not you.
Well,
but no, I think, and I think it comes back to what I was talking about earlier about fear and watching other people deal with it. It's inspiring. So you can, there's something about seeing a character who you like in a story, in a novel, in a film, getting put into the worst situation that a person can be put in. You start rooting for them. You start wanting to know what's going to happen. And so you start to care. And I think, thinking about it, it's possible that, reading a horror story, reading a novel, watching a film like that, one of the jump scares get the adrenaline going. And you'll see in a lot of horror films that people jump scare and then laugh straight away.
Yes.
It's a natural reaction. Less so with a book, because you're doing it in real time. But in horror films, you go into a cinema and watch a horror film, after every jump scare, there'll be laughter. Because people have to kind of recover, and it's almost like the natural reaction. And it's a really fascinating thing about how the human body works like that, about how we deal with that sudden increase of adrenaline, which needs to get released in some sort of way. So, watching Stephen King or watching Hammer horror films is like eating a really big hot chili.
There you go. That's an interesting take that not come across before, but Yes. Watch horror films are like eating a hot curry. There you go. actually, there was something really interesting that you touched on in there. You mentioned that it's safe because you're tucked up in bed, or you're in the cinema, or you're curled up on the sofa with your other half, each screaming and comforting each other or whatever. But so you're experiencing these things, you get that frisson of excitement, you get the adrenaline going, but ultimately you know it's safe. Ultimately, you know you're not going to get your head chopped off or whatever. So I guess from what you're saying, it's because with danger comes that element of excitement and the adrenaline and all that sort of thing, but we're doing it in kind of a safe, controlled way.
And it's a really interesting thing there about the difference between watching a horror film on your own and watching a horror film with other people. Because if you're watching it with other people, you have created that safe environment for yourself.
Yeah.
If you watch it alone, you don't have that. And that's when your brain goes into overdrive every time that you switch a light off.
Yeah.
because you don't look around you to tell you, don't be silly, that the things and images haunt you. And yeah. I think the most interesting thing about fear in modern culture is actually remembering certain scenes in your brain, and because it's only you seeing them, you can't share them with anything. I used to be terrified of E.T., right? For 15 years, I could not, absolutely terrified. Everyone was going, oh, the E.T. is the most fabulous film in the world. No. Terrified me, because every time that I turned off the light, I thought I saw his silhouette in the shadow of the room. I don't know how we got onto that, but no. But it's the same thing about safety. You know, watching with family with it's great. It's a cuddly little it's a cuddly little alien. Watching it on your own in the darkened room. I used to see a shadow at the top of the stairs when I was on my own, and completely different environment. Completely different mental reactions of how you deal with that. Yeah, it's only been the last 10 years that I could truly properly watch E.T.
Wow.
To be 30 years old.
That's a good point you touched on there. Not about E.T., but I mean about watching horror films on your own. I guess I'm thinking back to please tell me I'm not the only one who's done this. You watch a horror film, you think, that was good. That was quite scary. Oh, I've got through that. It's time to go to bed now. I'm just going to switch every light in the house on as I go to bed. Normally, walk up in darkness, no bother, but just watch this scary film. Switch all the lights on.
I'm not quite sure how much Blu-ray extras and DVD extras have taken that away. So you watch a horror film, you can quickly turn on and watch 10 minutes of the actor taking his rubber mask off and seeing how the shots work. But it's really interesting.
Wow. So you kind of touched on this a little. We got to wrap up soon, unfortunately. That's a fascinating topic.
Really?
Yeah. If it's all right with you, we'll bring you back another time. There's loads more we can talk about this. But you kind of touched on this a little bit in the start. I just want to kind of bring this full circle with this. What is it in your mind makes for a really good horror story? Because I'm sure we can think of all sorts of bad examples there, but what's kind of some of the keys that make for a really good horror story? One that doesn't just give you that instant gratification it's gone, but one that kind of maybe stays with you a bit and kind of just keeps niggling at you.
It's got to be the characters. And it's got to be actually an understanding and a connection between the viewer and the character. Take, for example, your bespoke Cabin in the Woods style things, where you've got five American teenagers, pretty much interchangeable, and you know at some point each one of them's going to be knocked off one another. Because you don't, if it's done badly, you don't have enough time to really connect with those. And the horror element of it is don't lose your virginity in a pool shed on a dark and moonlit night.
I'll make a note of that.
Whereas, you know, other horror stories, take the original Terminator, for instance. where you had one lead character who starts off, and it's topical because she's about to come back, and actually seeing this smiley young vicious woman just going around a young world, you get to know her over the course of the film, and by the end of the film she's a completely changed, different person. But because we stick with her, you know, we're going on that journey with her, we're seeing how each and every element affects her and changes her. So for example, we get to the film which is about to come out, which is kind of like rebooting the entire season after Terminator 2, and you can see she's an actual changed person. And having gone on that journey with her, every single thing that happens to that person affects her in a different way. And we go on that journey with her. Mm. And that's the kind of thing which I was talking about stays with you afterwards. Yeah. Because you start to think, actually, how would I react in that certain situation? Would I do better? Would I do worse? I am so glad that's not me. And I think the key to a good horror story, the key to a good thing that makes you go is makes you go, how would I react? I'm glad it's not me. But I know, thanks to this character, what I would do if it ever did happen to me.
Yeah. So, and I guess this is true for so many genres, it all comes down to good characterization. Make a good character that you can identify with, you can sympathize with, you can really care about, so that the effects on them have a deeper resonance with you.
Yeah, kind of brings me back to my book. That's on Halloween. It's all written from the point of view of one person. Yes. So you're inside of his head. And some pretty gruesome stuff happens to this one person. But because you are with him every single page, hopefully, you know, you get on that journey with him. So it's not one of those writers who goes, he walked into a plush panelled room with the golden drapes. Just goes into a room and goes, curtains, nice. But it's the same. I think it's the same thing about just being able to put yourself in the shoes of somebody.
Yeah.
So the main character in that, he's afraid of responsibility. For instance, he's stuck in his own role, and by the end of the book, he does his own. He addresses that in his own way. He knows what he has to do, and it's about accepting what you're afraid of and getting the inspiration from others to be able to face that fear and get on with your life. Yeah. So I think the key to a good horror story is actually understanding the characters, which is why the Dark Shadows range from Big Finish is been a godsend to write for, because it's essentially a soap opera. It's based on a gothic. Mm-hmm. It's essentially Dracula meets Crossroads.
A story we've all been looking for.
Yeah, we've judged it up a little bit, so this is season three, but it's all about the characterizations, and once you know, because this is season three, you've gone through every single, these characters have gone through everything, and you've gone through them with them, and understanding how each individual person reacts to fear, understanding how what we as listeners or we as readers can take from that, or can learn from it. We almost go on our own journey at the end of it as well.
Yeah.
And learn from these people.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Cool. I think that's probably a good place for us to, I won't say to stop, I'll simply say to pause, because I know we will come back to this again if you're up for that. There's so much more we could explore here. Show us the book again, because this book is coming out on Halloween.
This is a preview copy, so it does have not. Yeah, it's called The Axe and Grinding Stone. It's available to. By the time it comes out, this podcast comes out, yeah, you'll be able to pre-order it on Amazon and your local independent bookshop. So it's by a new company called Bad Press Inc. And it's a brilliant company. And what we really want to do is revitalize our local independent bookshops. So being able to go out there and being able to have those conversations and really sort of like go in there and support our local communities.
Brilliant. So that's The Axe and Grindstone. It's out on Halloween. I've been really fortunate. Paul let me read a preview copy of it. It's about a year or so ago, wasn't it? And I know the book has changed a bit since then. I can't wait to get hold of it just to see what you've done to that poor character. But it is a cracking book. And you're right, it comes down to characterization. You are there with the character. You get to know about them. You get to be concerned about what they're going through, which, as you say, is the key to good horror stories. So you get to experience this stuff without actually having to go through it yourself, but you still get the thrills of it. Brilliant. So, hey, Paul, if people want to find out a bit more about Paul, who you are, what you do, maybe get in touch, what's the best way?
Easiest way to do it is go to my website. It's MrPhipps.com. That's MrPhipps.com. You'll find out all about me on there, all the stuff that I've written, all the photos of random cool TV celebrities that I seem to do every so often. Just head along there and you'll find out.
Brilliant. So that's MrPhipps.com, Mr. spelt in full. So MrPhipps.com. Pop along to there, you'll find more information you can shake a very large stick at. Also, of course, all the links for all of Paul's social media, the links for where you can get the book, the links for the company is called again?
Bad Press Inc.
Bad Press Inc. All of those links are all going to be on the show notes, on the site that. On the page for this, in the show notes for the page for this episode, as always, that's at keithblakemorenoble.com/show. You'll find Paul's episode there. You'll find all of those contact details. Definitely go out and get a copy of that book. You'll enjoy it. If you like your horror stories, you'll like that one. And either way, find out more about Paul, get in touch with him, find out more that he gets up to at MrPhipps.com. That really is it for this episode. Thank you, dear listener, dear viewer, so much for joining me. Thank you, Paul, for taking time out to have this chat. I've absolutely loved it. I know we will have you back on again at some not too distant point in the future. Perhaps even before your second novel gets published.
I need to email someone about that. Yeah, no, it'll be there.
Cool. Well, again, thank you, Paul, for joining us. Thank you, dear viewer and dear listener, for joining us. And I'm going to leave you with Paul's favorite quote. It's one some of you may have heard before. It is a beautiful quote. We have nothing to fear but fear itself.
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. To find out more, please visit keithblakemorenoble.com.